When someone in your family is going through depression, it's hard to know what to say, and I said everything wrong. I'm Sam. Our family went through it, and I just kept saying, come on, let's get it together. The thing I should have been saying is, let's get you to the center, a place of hope. It's a place for you or a place for someone you love who's struggling with depression, anxiety, trauma, eating disorders. So many success stories. It's personal to me. They've actually saved the lives of people I love. If you felt like, I don't know what to do to dig out of this really dark place, and you've tried everything and you can't think of what to do next, make a phone call right now. Call the Center, a Place of Hope.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for the Center, a Place of Hope. The number is 888-726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a number of people, a great number of people, to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at the Center, a Place of Hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.
Welcome to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. I'm Jim Kress, and on behalf of our hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help AACC equip the church and provide Christian mental health care to those in need, visit aaccfoundation.org to donate. Your gift will ensure that this program and your station remain on the air. Now, let's join our host, Zach Clinton.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back into Life, Love, Faith, and Family. I'll be your host today, Zach Clinton. And as we keep charging into the new year, where many of us have big dreams, goals, and resolutions for 2025, I think it's important for us to be reminded that anything worth valuing in this life comes at a cost. Today, we're joined by someone who understands that cost, someone who understands sacrifice, discipline, and mental toughness that can help turn your commitments into consistency. His name is Chad Robichaud. Chad is a highly decorated former Force Recon Marine and Department of Defense contractor with 8 deployments to Afghanistan as part of a Joint Special Operations Command Task Force. After overcoming his personal battles with PTSD and nearly becoming a veteran suicide statistic, Chad founded the Mighty Oaks Foundation, a leading nonprofit serving the active duty, military veteran, and first responder communities around the world with highly successful faith-based combat trauma and resiliency programs. Again, he's a man who understands what resilience is really all about. Chad, thank you so much for joining me again today.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
Chad, as I mentioned, we've talked a lot about discipline. We've talked a lot about resilience, New Year's resolutions, and more. But you're a fighter. You're a warrior, tough as nails, but that doesn't mean that you're a stranger to pain and adversity in this life. I've heard your story many times. And what a lot of our audience might not be aware of, though, is that for soldiers and for veterans, the war often comes home with them. And oftentimes that's the shape of post-traumatic stress disorder. You've been vulnerable in your story and your testimony, sharing it all across the world about the challenges that you've gone through as it relates to PTSD. But you have a bone-chilling story about a very low, deep, dark, difficult moment in your journey that your wife, Kathy, actually not only encouraged you, confronted you, challenged you in, that really began to change your life and change your story. I would love for you to take us back to that moment, what happened there, but then also how have you begun to manage and overcome the symptoms of PTSD in your own life?
You know, I was a Force Recon Marine, and I'd be a DOD contractor on a JSOC task force, and I went to Afghanistan 8 times in that capacity, and during those, there's some very hard deployments, and some things happened. There's a lot of loss of friends and dealt with several things, including abduction by a foreign intelligence agency. And a lot of those things led to me coming home, being diagnosed with PTSD and dealing with debilitating panic attacks, anxiety, depression, and went in a real dark spiral. And it led me to hitting a rock bottom. That rock bottom for me ended up being separating from my family, facing a divorce, and having a real battle with taking my life. And I think I know very well that you know that, you know, we're in a suicide epidemic in America, I think globally, but certainly in America, highest in our lifetime. And then in the veteran first responder community, it's just, you know, catastrophic. I mean, it's, some people say 22 a day. The real numbers are probably more like in the 40s or 50 a day. Nonetheless, one a day is too many. And, you know, I had reached this point to where I'm like, I didn't want to take my life because I wanted to die or because I wanted to escape pain. I realized the damage I was causing the people that I loved and cared about. And this conclusive thought came over me that maybe my family would be sad without me, but they would be better off. So I decided to take my life and I Glock 22 pistol, and I was sitting in my closet in my apartment with the pistol to my head. And I put my family pictures on the floor around me to try to build up the courage to kind of pull that trigger. It was in that moment, my wife had came and knocked on my door in my apartment. This had went on for a short period of time, but it was one of those moments that was in that closet, and she had knocked on my door in my apartment, and I wasn't going to answer it, but when I heard her voice, I panicked. I went to the door, and I was just so angry that she was there interrupting me killing myself. It was like, which sounds crazy, but I was just so, like, angry. She was uninvited there. She didn't belong there. She was interrupting me in that moment. And I was just yelling at her for her to leave. I just wanted her to leave. And she wouldn't leave. And in that argument that we had, she asked me a question that radically changed my life. She's like, how could I do everything I did in my life? And she saw me do, I talked about discipline. She saw that discipline lifestyle. She saw me, we met when we were 17 and 18. She saw me become a recon Marine. She saw me go to schools and training and deployments and the MMA side, cutting weight for fights and all this stuff. She saw this discipline lifestyle. She's like, how could you do all of that? When it comes to your family, you'll quit. For me, that was like, you know, so convicting. She was absolutely right. I've been successful at professional things, but when it came to the most important things, like being a husband, being a father, I quit. And I quit on my own will to live. And so I made a pretty radical decision at that point to get back in that fight. It wasn't anything to do with my faith or God. I just knew that the work ethic, the discipline, the things that you hear Jocko talk a lot about, the things that made me successful as a recon Marine, like all those things, I had the knowledge of being able to have that work ethic and discipline and character to do those things. And so I thought if I could apply that to my life, I could pull this thing back together. Again, it had nothing to do with my faith at that moment, but what it did come in is, you talk about those pillars, like mentally and physically, I had those things. I battled my mental health, but I had a pretty strong mind, a pretty strong body. Socially, I had surrounded myself. So I'm going through those pillars, right? Socially, I had surrounded myself with people that told me everything I wanted to hear and not what I needed to hear. I had no accountability in my life. So the one area I recognized, I was looking at three pillars, right? Mind, body, spirit, social. I wouldn't look at the faith pillar. The one area I recognized in that moment was that I didn't have that social support. And I knew I couldn't do it alone, and I knew I couldn't do it with the people I surrounded myself by. I needed some hard accountability because I was in that three-year downward spiral. I was in this MMA gym. I won a world title. I was black belt in jiu-jitsu. Like, everybody lifted me up. And again, I had no accountability. So I wanted to go outside of my circle. So I asked my wife, who was going to this church, is there some man at this church that could hold me accountable that's making this decision? And she introduced me to this man named Steve Toth, who was an elder on call at the church. And so what I was seeking was that social pillar, someone outside my network that would hold me accountable to this decision. What I got was the social and the spiritual, because he's the one that identified that fourth pillar. And as I met with him and presented that plan of how I was going to fix my life, I'm like, hey, I need you to help me. This is how I fix my life. Basically, I'm capable, right? I'm mentally tough. I'm physically tough. I've done all these things. Like, I have a plan here. Like, how I'm going to fix my life. And he said, if this plan doesn't have anything to do with your relationship with God, I'm not going to waste your time. I'm not going to let you waste mine. That was the fourth one. That was a spiritual pillar. And in that moment, looking back, not knowing that at the time, knowing what I know now, looking back, that was the one moment that I first time in my life that I had all four of those at the same time, because I followed his lead and I stepped into a relationship with Jesus. I didn't even really know what I was doing. I just knew that I needed to do something because nothing else in my life was working. We have a saying that we have a foundation that comes from this. If what you're doing isn't working, why not try something different? What I was doing wasn't working. Medication, counseling, VA counseling, therapist, all this stuff I tried. Professional success, financial success, the accolades of winning MMA titles. None of those things were working. It was time for me to try something different. So he presented the spiritual pillar. I stepped into that through relationship with Jesus and became very intentional about that. And through that discovery, what I realized was maybe simple to some people, but it's pretty profound to me, what I realized was all these bad things that had happened to me in my life. Terrible childhood, very physical abusive childhood. Had loss of life early on. My brother died when I was shot and killed when I was 14. He was 15. Going into Marine Corps and the hardships of my marriage. We've been married 30 years now, but going into a marriage coming out of two broken families, it was very difficult navigating how to be married. And so there's a lot of hardship there. And then going to Afghanistan and losing friends there and all the stuff that happened. As bad as those things were, I recognized those things alone didn't leave me to a pistol, to be in that closet with a pistol man, would lead me there were the choices I was making in response to those things. I was making poor choices that was leading me to bad places. And what the Bible had presented to me was a blueprint for living and how to make better choices. So it became a tool to be intentional. People say all the time, life doesn't come with a handbook, but the truth is it does. We just don't read it, right? It's in the Bible becomes a pretty good handbook. And so what I was discovering was that I was still facing anxiety. I was still facing depression. I was still facing anger. Just stepping in a relationship with Jesus didn't miraculously heal those things. I'm not saying God can't. It didn't for me. But what it did show was that when I did face those things, I was able to have a reference point to go back and make better decisions in response to those things. And that's what became intentional about doing. And so building that spiritual pillar for me, like I said, I think God could have completely cured me of those things. I think he chose not to, for me to go through the journey of being intentional and learning, okay, you're angry right now. Okay, you're depressed right now. And it would just draw me to him to go in the Bible, go in the Word and figure out what's the best response to this to make a better response. Because for me, the situation I was in was because of making poor decisions in the past and responses to that. So I became very intentional by that. And it led me to a moment where I believed I had a very balanced four pillars. I was really strong mentally, physically. I was in great shape. Socially, now I'm surrounding myself with the right accountability partners, right people, and spiritually have a strong spiritual foundation. So that led me to a place of being a really holistic place. And then I went on this journey of you talk about discipline. I went on this journey that I really felt on the side of it, like convicted that I had survived this. Like, and I don't mean survive combat. I mean survived this battle with depression, suicide. I felt like convicted because I'm like, I'm on the other side of this and all these other people are suffering. I have the cure, like literally the cure to this, and I need to share it. So I need to really equip myself. I really felt like that. And I didn't understand what happened to me. So I went on this journey for information. It was like a very disciplined, intentional journey for information. And I went back to my clinical psychologist and I'm like, I want to understand physiologically what happened to me. Like I'm at this JSOC task force doing this in this premier operation. I'm like doing this great job at this amazing opportunity to do this job. And in one moment, like the wheels fly off. What happened to me physiologically? I wanted to know. And really he didn't have answers for me. And so by design, it created a survival mechanism that brought on stress and anxiety and all these things. And so that just like, I was completely blown away. It's that the revelation that I wasn't broken, that I wasn't disordered, that I was actually, my body was doing exactly what it was created to do, that it just lit a fire under me to share with everyone that, you know, suffering with this thing. And that manifested in the founding of Mighty Oaks Foundation. And, you know, and today we know we've served well over 500,000 active duty service members and veterans and first responders and their spouses now, and just run this amazing, amazing program.
Right. And what's amazing, Chad, and I want to dive even deeper into the social one here in a few moments, but I want to touch on Mighty Oaks Foundation because God clearly used your pain and now has turned it into one of your greatest purposes. I remember years ago I was invited to kind of like a young leadership summit, and Dr. Jay Strack out of Student Leadership University was leading it. I'll never forget, he got up there and he looked at all of us and he said, "Don't you dare commit the sin of the desert." And we all kind of looked, and I was like, man, I know a lot of sins. I've never heard of the sin of the desert. And we all kind of looked kind of like wondering what he was even mentioning. And he noticed, and he said, "You guys don't get it, do you?" He said, "The sin of the desert is when you know where the water is and you don't share it." What I love about you is, like you said, you were equipped, you were educated on all of these things, and you said, "I have to share this with other people who maybe are suffering or who maybe are going through a similar journey as what I went through." So as you talk about the Mighty Oaks Foundation, speak a little bit more about what you guys do there and some of the incredible resources that you guys have, because you guys have a lot of them, but I just believe that they'll bring a lot of hope, encouragement, and even challenge and motivation to the people listening today.
Yeah, well, I mean, we do a couple of things at Mighty Oaks, four things specifically. We have our primary thing is a recovery program. So that's where men and women who have been afflicted by trauma, whether combat trauma or life trauma, come with us for a week at our one of our ranches. And by the way, it's all paid for. We do about between $7 to $8 million we'll do this year in free programming. Pay for travel and everything. So anybody's listening, you can go to mightyoaksprograms.org and apply and come active duty service members, veterans, first responders, spouses. We pay for everything. And they'll come to that camp, and it's a non-clinical peer-to-peer mentorship program. And so they get put in these peer groups, and they walk through that through a program that we've methodology we put together that they walk through in a peer level and help come to their own conclusions of where they are, take personal responsibility, and apply the discipline to apply biblical processes to align their lives with the lives they were created to live. And then when they leave there, they know how to, essentially what they're getting taught during the week is how to use those tools to have the accountability and stay connected to the process moving forward. So that week is like kind of intensive. And then they walk forward, and the week doesn't end when they leave. They stay connected with this group and continue to move forward together. And then we have a discipleship process that raises up the next group of leaders to continue that peer process moving forward. And one of those classes, by the way, there's 14 core classes during a week, and one of them is called The Truth About PTSD, which is a book I wrote, a little kind of handbook that I wrote. We've given out hundreds of thousands of copies to the troops. And that book was inspired by that course I took through American Association of Christian Counselors, the PTSD and Care Council book, and that creation perspective of what PTSD is and what it's not, more importantly, what it's not. And so that's the main thing we do is our recovery program.
I tell you what, every time I see you, Chad, and every time I hear you speak, I'm just reminded that we serve a God who is in the details, who really linked us far before when we actually met face-to-face, just through that course that we were able to develop here at the AACC. But let me just say this from all of us at the American Association of Christian Counselors. We're so grateful for people like you who are doing God's work for the advancement of His kingdom in this field of really mental and holistic health care. Thank you so much for what you do, Chad. I have a couple questions left because you talked about what you're doing overseas. You have a book that you released in 2024 titled A Mission Without Borders, Why a Father and Son Risked It All for the People of Ukraine. And brother, I found this book incredibly moving. You help us understand not only the everyday challenges that the people of Ukraine actually faced, you also help us understand why God doesn't just call us to love our neighbor, but also those that are kind of strangers to us. But then you also talk about this relationship development and deepening that you got to experience with your son Hunter, because ultimately, let me say something, suffering is very relatable and it actually bonds us. That's where a band of brothers, a band of sisters is actually formed, when you're going through deep, dark, and difficult times together. Speak about all the lessons that you learned and some of the things that really helped form and develop the relationship you continue to have with your son.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think anybody anywhere ever would want to have to go to war, much less go to war with your and bring your son there. And so we have my family is since World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam. I'm an Afghanistan veteran. My oldest son Hunter's an Afghanistan veteran. My youngest son is still in the reserves in the Marine Corps. So almost a full century of service in our family. So it's no surprise that, if you're in a long war like Afghanistan, you would run into a scenario that both me and my son served in Afghanistan. So we served in the same war. He has a heart for people like I do. He's a very compassionate heart. And so during Afghanistan withdrawals, he wanted to be part of that. I remember him saying like, "Hey, I want to be on this." And I'm like, "Absolutely not." And he's like, "I'm an Afghanistan veteran too. I'm not just your son. I'm an Afghanistan veteran. I was a Marine. I have an interpreter there too." So I let him be involved. But he didn't come into Afghanistan with us, but he was involved in an operation. And then Ukraine kicked off and he wanted to be involved. And same thing. I was like, "Okay, but I'm not letting you go into Ukraine." So he got involved. But it was a matter of time to where he earned his spot. He's very smart. He's very capable. He's a very natural leader. He had earned his spot on the team, and it came a time to where I had to make a decision. So whether I'm going to keep holding him back out of my fear or control, me wanting to control the situation. God was burdening his heart to go and do this work, and I was standing in the way. So I had to really have my own little come to Jesus moment and sit down and say, kind of really reflect, am I going to let my son, who I love and feel responsible to protect, go into a war? And by the way, I don't mean just go into a country that's at war. Like, we were going to the front lines. Like, people were thousands of people were dying every day. Like, we were going into where indirect fire was, and so to make that decision to take him in, like, to combat was such a big deal for me. It's a, I don't want people to understand, like, it was just like, oh, I'm just, man, it was a big deal. And I had to deal with his mom.
Right. Right.
So, who's my wife. And so I had to really just get on my knees and take it to God and say, man, I love Hunter, but as much as I love Hunter, God loves him more. And that was a reality that I had to really understand it. As much as I love him, and as much as I think that it's impossible to love him more, God actually loves him more, is capable of loving him more than I can. And as much as I feel like I can protect him as his dad, God can protect him better than me. And in the safest place for my son to be, safer than being on a couch in Texas in his own home, is being in the middle of God's will. And if it was God's will for him to be on the front lines of Ukraine, and God was burdening him to do that, who was I to stand in the way of that? And so I had to make the decision to go forward and bring him into Ukraine.
You know, Chad, as you mentioned, I think it's such an incredible prayer, and it's a pertinent one that every parent, I think, needs to really be able to pray, to surrender their child over to the Lord and His will for their life. Because I think it's easy to try to control things. It's easy to try to protect your children. But then understanding, like you just said, that the safest place your child can be is walking in God's will and walking in the calling that God has placed upon their life. So that's such an encouraging story to me. I found that fascinating in it throughout that book. But Chad, to the person out there today who maybe feels pretty isolated, maybe feels discouraged, maybe is really struggling with being vulnerable. They view vulnerability as a weakness and not a strength. Where do they begin? Do they begin with mentorship? Do they begin by seeking and asking for help, counseling? What would you say are some good first steps for them as we close out our time together today?
Yeah, well, first of all, you said it right. Like, we were not created. We're not meant to do life alone. We're meant to do it in community. As comfortable as it may be sometimes to be alone and be in isolation, we're not meant to. And the good news is we don't have to. You know, and there's lots of different types of churches. I think one of the things that, you know, organizations like the American Association of Christian Counselors, the Biblical Counseling Coalition, one of the things that I've seen these organizations help with, I say the Biblical Counseling Coalition because they've helped us before to help plant people in churches that didn't have churches. And it's just, if you can't find a church in your community, reach out to one of these organizations and say, hey, I live in this community and I need a church. Even Mighty Oaks, that's not what we do for mission, but I can promise you, somebody calls and says, I live in this area and I don't have a church. Somebody on the phone is going to help you find a church. Get online and look at churches and see, you know, does this match like the kind of environment I want to be in? Walk in and shake somebody's hand and say hello and make a friend. That initial introduction, as uncomfortable as it may be the first intentional step that you could take. Maybe your New Year's resolution, make a friend, join a community. I want to be part of a community. And that'll open up into that social pillar, which is a completely essential for holistic health. You have to be around. You're created to be around community. And as difficult as it may be, as uncomfortable as it may feel for you, you have to have that.
It's so true. Make a friend, let somebody in, build a community, and recognize that you are not meant or created to do this life alone. Vulnerability is not a weakness, my friend. Vulnerability is a strength. Chad, my friend, again, from all of us here at Life, Love, Faith, and Family, on behalf of my dad, Dr. Tim Clinton, and myself, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for joining us. We love and appreciate you, my friend.
Love you guys, man. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.
If someone in your family has depression or anxiety, it's hard to know what to do. We went through that. I'm Sam. The center is a place of hope. Lives are being healed. God is changing families.
Coming to the center, it's just life-altering. My relationship with my husband, my relationship with my family.
Struggling to keep it all together, or no one knows, or you're hiding things, or you feel like you've hit some crisis.
It's amazing to think that there could be so much change.
Man, I'm so grateful for the center. It's so helpful for me, and I'm so hopeful.
The center, a place of hope. Call today. a lot of people are surprised that insurance can help cover this.
Dive in, give yourself all to it. Watch what happens.
Call the Center, A Place of Hope, right now.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for the Center, A Place of Hope. The number is 888-726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a great number of people to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at the Center, A Place of Hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.